Reading this morning is from 1 Samuel chapter 14, verses 6 to 15. Jonathan said to his young armor-bearer, "Come, let's go over to the outpost of those uncircumcised fellows. Perhaps the Lord will act in our behalf. Nothing can hinder the Lord from saving, whether by many or by few." "Do all that you have in mind," his armor-bearer said. "Go ahead, I am with you heart and soul." Jonathan said, "Come then, we will cross over toward the men and let them see us. If they say to us, 'Wait there until we come to you,' we will stay where we are and not go up to them. But if they say, 'Come up to us,' we will climb up, because that will be our sign that the Lord has given them into our hands." So both of them showed themselves to the Philistine outpost. "Look," said the Philistines, "the Hebrews are crawling out of the holes where they were hiding in." The men of the outpost shouted to Jonathan and his armor-bearer, "Come up to us, and we will teach you a lesson." So Jonathan said to his armor-bearer, "Climb up after me. The Lord has given them into the hand of Israel." Jonathan climbed up using his hands and feet, with his armor-bearer right behind him. The Philistines fell before Jonathan, and his armor-bearer followed and killed behind him. In that first attack, Jonathan and his armor-bearer killed some 20 men in the area of half an acre. Then panic struck the whole army, those in the camp and field and those in the outposts and the raiding parties, and the ground shook. It was a panic sent by God. I was scheduled to fly from the airport in Quito to a city down on the southern coast. I had arrived almost 3 hours before the flight with my ticket, my passport, and my suitcase. When I checked in, they took my suitcase, and I was to go sit in a boarding area, which was fine. After about 2 hours of waiting, there was an announcement about our flight. We were informed that we would be leaving sometime soon, but they didn't know when that would be. Never happens in Ecuador or Peru or other places either. That news provoked one of the passengers to get up and complain at the counter. He said he was a minister of the government, and they had to board all of us on that plane right now so that he wouldn't be late for his meeting down on the coast. Well, over the next 3 hours or so, we heard more announcements from the counter and more complaints from the minister. Finally, we were told that we would be boarding shortly, but that we would have to carry our own luggage on board, which was doable. We were all relieved to finally be departing. Even the minister didn't have anything bad to say. All our luggage was piled in a heap out on the taxiway, and we had to claim all of our bags. As they were identified, bags were put on the plane, and we were taken to another room. Looking out the window at where all of our personal effects had been piled so high, we saw a single suitcase still sitting there, having been abandoned by all the other suitcases. After about 20 minutes, a police officer appeared with a dog on a leash. People had been talking about how drugs were being smuggled out of the country all the time, so no one was really surprised when the dog discovered the contraband and the bag was taken away. At least it wasn't my bag. A few minutes later, the manager of the airline came out and apologized to us for the long delay. No one was surprised when the minister announced that he would look into the way they were running this airline. Then he asked about the drugs that were being smuggled and how many kilos that they had recovered. The airline manager shook his head. What he said got everyone's attention. There was a bomb in that bag, and it was a pretty big one. Without asking permission from any of the other passengers, the minister stood up, and he said to the manager, "We have all the time in the world, so if you'd like to check our bags again, we're willing to wait." What had changed? The bomb had been sitting there for many hours, and no one knew about it. Up to the point where its presence was discovered, the minister was thinking that his meeting trumped everything else. suddenly his priorities changed. Unlike the passengers who had purchased a ticket for that flight, Jonathan knew the danger he was choosing to face. Number one, Jonathan's attitude, an opportunity for God to be glorified. Jonathan's attitude, an opportunity for God to be glorified. This passage illustrates the importance of having the right priorities. Focusing on God's glory, we know he will resolve the issues we struggle with regarding his call in our lives. As a child of the King, our attitude towards service is crucial. Chapter 14, verse 1. One day, Jonathan, son of Saul, said to the young man bearing his armor, "Come, let's go over to the Philistine outpost on the other side." And then down to verse 6, part B. "Perhaps the Lord will act in our behalf. Nothing can hinder the Lord from saving, whether by many or by few." The presence of the enemy is an opportunity for God to be glorified. Jonathan's reaction was exactly the opposite of how the rest of the Israelites responded. Chapter 13, back up just a little bit. Verse 5, "The Philistines assembled to fight Israel with 3,000 chariots, 6,000 charioteers, and soldiers as numerous as the sand on the seashore." Verse 6, "When the men of Israel saw that their situation was critical and that their army was hard-pressed, they hid in caves and thickets, among the rocks and in pits and cisterns." They had every reason to hide, but that is not Jonathan's response. He knows the presence of the enemy is an opportunity for God to act, for God to be glorified. Jonathan knows that personal involvement is required. Though Jonathan is a prince in Israel, he is also a soldier, and soldiers are called to engage the enemy. The battle is going. Our involvement is required. Don't rely on circumstances or resources. Trust in God. The Israelites had all kinds of reasons and excuses. They had few resources. Verse 22 of chapter 13 makes this statement. "So on the day of the battle, not a soldier with Jonathan and Saul had a sword or a spear in his hand. Only Saul and his son Jonathan had them." The Israelites had no weapons, and so they fled. Jonathan had few resources, but he had God. So instead of fleeing, he went and faced the enemy. Number two, Jonathan's assurance, God's unchanging character. Jonathan's assurance, God's unchanging character. Sometimes we think we understand what God tells us to do, but then we reinterpret his will to fit our own expectations. Kyle, he's back there praying for me. Would you do what you just did? Perfect. As you notice, this is Joshua. He's getting instruction from God. Very important when they're going to go defeat the folks in the city there. And after the very end, he realizes, of course, God does, that this is a guy he's talking to. And so he reminds him again, take the what? Take the ark. Okay? Let's go to the next one. Now, I don't know that that's a horse. It's some kind of a sturdy steed, I think. But there he is. He's practicing with his trumpet. And I think the horse is thinking he's going to fall off. Nobody rides like that. But anyway. Okay, he's getting the word out that they got to have a meeting. Okay, next one. Okay, he's got the group all together, and he's not poking them, but he's trying to get them to understand everything that has to be done, and they understand. So they're excited. They get a chance to go after Jericho. Next, please. Finally, Joshua gets the signal. They use hand signals, kind of like my hand pilot that I don't have, to know that they're ready. And so what have we got? On the next slide. There it is. In their haste to defeat Jericho, they grabbed the wrong ark. Right. Now, before we criticize them, perhaps we need to be reminded that ark and ark are spelled the same way. Okay. They had them both, but anyway. Okay, thank you. Apologize for that. Neither victory nor safety are guaranteed because of one's obedience, as much as we would like to have that be the case. Jonathan says in verse 6b, perhaps the Lord will act in our behalf. In talking to his armor bearer, he cannot give him the words that God is going to deliver us. But his response and statement is that perhaps the Lord will act in our behalf. Obviously, the other part of that is perhaps he will not. But it is the Lord that has that choice. God hadn't promised Jonathan that he was going to be victorious. He hadn't sent an angel to write on the side of his tent and tell him, tomorrow at such and such a time, have all the confidence in the world. God's going to send a panic. No. Jonathan knew the enemy was out there and what he had to do. This attitude is illustrated when he says, nothing can hinder the Lord from saving, whether by many or by few. I wonder if sometimes we hinder the Lord from saving by many. Like the Israelite army, we run and hide and somehow expect that someone else will have the faith or the trust or the lack of common sense to do what God is asking them to do. In this situation, God saves with few because the many aren't willing. Number 3, Jonathan's accomplice, companion in faith and deed. Companion in faith and deed. It is imperative to go into battle with those who share a confidence in God. Look at the response of the armor bearer when he says, do all that you have in mind. Go ahead. I'm with you for the first 5 steps. No, I am with you heart and soul. Partner with those who actively follow God. At first glance, we might think that Jonathan had the wrong armor bearer. This guy had to be the dumbest soldier in the army. His task was to carry the weapon for someone else into battle. He obviously forgot that he wouldn't have a weapon when it came time to fight. No, I don't think that he forgot about that. I think he understood that in battle he would surrender the weapon to Jonathan, and then he would do whatever he could to help. You see, Jonathan had a servant who shared his confidence in God. Friends, find those around you that believe in the Creator God, in the Redeemer God, in the God who gave his best for us, and then together walk out to serve him as he leads. Step out in faith, knowing that the one who calls us is also the one who accompanies us. There's a Chinese saying that we would do well to heed. The best reason is a good example. The best reason is a good example. When people ask you about your faith, hopefully they can see in your life that you believe it as well. The best reason is a good example. Step out in faith knowing that God is the one who has called us. Jesus said that he would never do what? He would never leave us nor forsake us. Never abandon us. Never walk away from us. Never throw up his hands and say it's no use. We do that. He doesn't do that. David said in Psalm 23, verse 4, that he did not fear to walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Why? Because he knew that God was walking with him there. Does our response to God's call show faith or fear? Verses 8 to 10. Jonathan said, come then, we will cross over towards the men and let them see us. If they say to us, wait there until we come to you, we will stay where we are and not go up to them. But if they say, come up to us, we will climb up, because that will be our sign that the Lord has given them into our hands. Human logic is not the basis for determining what is God's plan. In this passage, Jonathan does a lot of things that amaze us. He advises the enemy of his presence. He calls out to them. Probably would have sent him an email if it wasn't late and they'd be too tired to get out of bed to go see what it said. He lets them know he's coming. And by inference, he's telling them what his plan is. He was going to climb up there and engage with them on their own turf. What more could they ask for? Bleachers, maybe some folks cheering the crowds, whatever it is. Number four, Jonathan's approach. A lot of words perhaps we could utilize, but this one I think says it all. Inconceivable. Jonathan's approach, it was inconceivable. He proposes what I call a reverse fleece. You know what a fleece is, right? Okay. When it gets too hot and the sheep decide that they want to get rid of their coats. And yeah. I think that there are a lot more naked sheep running around than there ought to be out there. But the way Jonathan does it is to reverse just how he's going to set up this fleece. We make it so difficult that God has got to do a miracle to convince us that this is his will for us to walk in step and follow him. Jonathan turns it completely around the other way. He really says, if these Philistines are so smart as they ought to be, they will know that it's not wise to come down off their plateau, descending down the cliff face, to possibly run into an ambush in the dark. Rather, they're going to say, why should we climb down there? These guys are stupid enough to show up. Why don't we invite them to come up to us? The natural response is for the Philistines to invite them to come on up, and they will show them a thing or two. And that is exactly what happened. No human logic, but God's plan. You see, it would take a miracle from God to stop Jonathan from going forward. God would have to change the nature of these Philistine soldiers. Jonathan says that if God does that, then Jonathan won't go up. But knowing Jonathan, he's got a plan B. And he'll just meet him at the bottom and deal with him there. Either way, he's going to do it. He's determined to do his part no matter what. With God, all things are possible. But human strategies fail. How many of you here have ever served in the military in any branch? Okay, I take it that's the U.S. military. Would you, if you found yourself following an officer that acted like Jonathan, would you feel comfortable in doing that? If we're going to attack the enemy, as Jonathan says, we've got to let them know that we're coming because it might not be convenient for them. They might be sleeping or something. No, most of you would probably say, if I can turn the page, that he wouldn't go to the academy, that he never passed his strategy or logic course, but it was God's way. When somebody would say, I trust you enough to step out, even when it doesn't make sense. Following God's call doesn't make sense to the world. Verse 11. So both of them showed themselves to the Philistine outpost. Look, said the Philistines, the Hebrews are crawling out of the holes they were hiding in. The men of the outpost shout to Jonathan and his armor bearer, come up to us and we will teach you a lesson. The world will always scoff at a believer's decision to obey God's call because it doesn't make sense to them. According to their experience and their understanding, following God is for those who are losers, who can't do it on their own, who need to have a crutch. Well, as we found out this past week, if you need a crutch, it's kind of nice to have one. Beth has gotten pretty good at getting around with a crutch. But how wrong they are. Crutches are good if you are a cripple. It appears at times that the enemy has the upper hand. You can look at what they're doing. They're getting it their way, it seems. As missionaries serving in Latin America, we had been places that are deep in the enemy's territory. In some areas, when you drive in, you can sense that the enemy has been in control in that area for centuries. He's well fortified. He has the time and taken it to be sure that his defenses are strong, that there are no weaknesses for us to exploit. But the truth really is that he knows the truth, that greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world. He is a defeated foe, no matter what he tries to say, no matter how he postures. Our choice to obey demonstrates what? It demonstrates confidence in God. Not confidence in ourselves or our abilities or our resources. Confidence in God. Verse 12b. So Jonathan said to his armor bearer, "Climb up after me. The Lord has given them into the hand of us." No. He says, of Israel. Lead by example. Although Jonathan went first, I think he really understood that he was not the first one up that hill, that God had preceded him. Acknowledge the source of every victory. It didn't belong to Jonathan or his armor bearer. It doesn't belong to us. It belongs to God. Notice the faith that he put in the Lord. How by faith he chose to see the accomplishment of what had yet to be undertaken. He was already talking about the victory that God will give. Number 5, Jonathan's attribution. You can check in a dictionary. It is an actual word. Sharing the credit. He was sharing the credit. Finally, notice that he gives credit to other people for faithful service. Now, perhaps you feel that Jonathan is exaggerating a little bit. And in a sense, maybe he is. How many people were climbing that cliff? The army? No. 2. Jonathan and his armor bearer. And yet, what does he say? That God is giving into the hand of Israel this great victory. I think Jonathan understood that there are times when you stand as a representative, in this case, for the nation of Israel. He was not going to take any credit for what God had done, but he was going to do everything in his power to be faithful and to serve in obedience. The battle belongs to the Lord. It always has, and it always will. Verse 13 says that Jonathan climbed up using his hands and feet with his armor bearer right behind him. Parentheses. So when did Jonathan's armor bearer pass along the weapons that he was carrying up the cliff without stabbing him in the back or anything else? I'm sure that, as Scripture often says, it was done in the fullness of time. Whenever it was appropriate. When obeying God's call, focus on what? On the opportunities instead of the obstacles. Jonathan had a ton of obstacles. Not enough weapons. No support. Nobody else with him. He was going it alone except for the guy behind him, who, when he got to battle, wouldn't have a weapon. It didn't seem to matter. To Jonathan, it was an opportunity for God to be glorified. 3 chapters later, you find David doing the same thing when he had a little conversation, very brief, with Goliath. Have you ever wondered how Jonathan and David's hearts were so closely knit together? These young men were wholly dedicated to being obedient to God, leaving the consequences of their obedience in his hands. By God's grace, Jonathan's armor bearer was blessed with the same spirit. Number 6, Jehovah's approval. Had to be an A in there someplace. Impact of obedience. Impact of obedience. Jonathan's choice to obey God resulted in victory for the whole nation of Israel. Consequences spread outward, as do blessings. God will ensure the ultimate defeat of his enemy. It might not be the enemy you see, might not be the one you want defeated. It probably won't be in the time frame you want. But God will one day rule supreme. The Bible tells us that every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. That day is coming. Obedience opens the door for God's demonstration of power. Maybe you have wondered why in your life you haven't experienced much power. Maybe this morning he is asking you, what are you doing to be obedient to my call? Verse 15. Then panic struck the whole army, those in the camp and field, and those in the outposts and raiding parties, and the ground shook. It was a panic sent by God. God often chooses to demonstrate his power when we step out in obedience. Where do you find in your Bible verse 15? It isn't before verse 14 or verse 13 or verse 12. I think if you look in there, it is after verse 14. After Jonathan and his armor bearer had engaged the enemy. Remember the crossing of the Jordan River? 40 years they'd been in the wilderness, and God finally said, it's time to cross over, get you into the promised land. There were some instructions. Joshua was not going to lead them across the river. But what they're going to do is have some priests who were carrying the ark that had to actually step down into the river. And as they did, the water backed up and the ground underneath them dried out so that they stood in the middle of the river on dry land. But they could only go partway. And then they waited for everybody else to go over. Now, one of the instructions they had, of course, was that they had to stay about 1,000 yards away from the ark. Easy enough to do the way it was set up for them to go downstream, and they were staying away from the ark. Joshua 3, 15 to 17 says, now the Jordan is at flood stage all during harvest. Yet as soon as the priests who carried the ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap a great distance away. That great distance was 20 miles. The priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stopped in the middle of Jordan and stood on dry ground while all Israel passed by until the whole nation had completed the crossing on dry ground. What would have happened if the people were waiting for God to act first? You know, we don't want to get the ark wet. Maybe it'll fall in the mud. So let's wait until God stops everything flowing and dries it all up. No. If they would have waited for God to act, where do you think they would be? Well, their bones would probably be some buried in the river someplace. They would still be standing there, perhaps. The people waited for God to do his river miracle. They would have gotten tired and hungry and just plain out of sorts. Jonathan knew what had to be done. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. By the way, trivial pursuit question perhaps, where did the river crossing take place? Verse 16 says, so the people crossed over opposite Jericho. In full view of the city of Jericho that they were going to be defeating, they crossed there. People of Jericho were not impressed by the fighting prowess of the Hebrew horde. What made them shake in their sandals was witnessing the Hebrew God stop the overflowing river in front of their city, dry the river bottom on the south side for the people to cross over, and back up the flooding side on the north for 20 miles. Without a doubt, they knew that Jericho was going to be the first of many cities to fall. I want to share an incident that we experienced many years ago on the field, and I've got permission from my son to share it. I'll do it as briefly as I can. While we were on home assignment, we were asked to spend 4 years in Ecuador instead of Peru because of the terrorism in Peru was such that I couldn't work with the indigenous people, with the Indians. And they needed somebody in Ecuador that would be able to do that, and so we agreed that we would go to Ecuador. 2 weeks before we were to leave for Ecuador, Jonathan got hit in the eye with a BB. Unbeknownst to us, the BB did not ricochet off of his eye, but it made its way to the back of the eye. 3 different ophthalmologists examined his eye during those 2 weeks. All 3 said the same thing. We can't tell you how bad it is because the eye is still hemorrhaging. Well, as we got closer to having to leave for Ecuador, we didn't know for sure what to do. So we called headquarters, and they do what most good headquarters people do. They said, pray about it. Well, we've been praying about it. Then they gave you the real wise one, make up your own mind. Thank you. Hang up on them. We believe that God wanted us to go, still unresolved. And so we arrived there at there in Quito, up at 10,000 feet elevation, a little pressure on his eye, of course. Spent the night there, and in the morning, Jonathan was knocking on our door. Came in, sat on the bed, said his eye really hurt, and the first thing, of course, that went through my mind, as small as my mind is that we made a mistake, that somehow God didn't really want us to do that. We should have stayed in the States where they have real medical people and be able to figure out what was going on with Jonathan and what we'd have to do about it. But we believe that God had called us to go. So when he came in and sat on the bed, saying that his eye had hurt, I asked if I could take a look at it. And when I lifted his eyelid, a corroded BB dropped into my hand. It had been in the back of his eye for 2 weeks, causing the pain that he was experiencing when the doctors kept saying, don't be a sissy, there's nothing there that's going to be hurting you. Little did they know. Now, one of the things that amazed me, and at first for about 16 seconds, I was a little bit put out about it. 3 different physicians that not one of them took an x-ray. Now, I know that that's not the first thing that they do. It's generally the second thing. They want to, first of all, see if you got any insurance or money to pay, and then they'll take an x-ray. None of them took the x-ray. If they had done so, what do you think they would have figured needed to be done? It's not going to fall out by itself. Never happen. We're going to have to operate. After we stepped out in faith, God resolved the problem. 2 weeks stateside, 1 night in Ecuador. Those 2 weeks with seeing the doctors and so on, it was still a problem, still there, undiscovered. In the morning, there in Quito, it was sitting in my hand. Now, if we would have stayed, say, 3 months in the States, I believe that Jonathan would have had that for 3 months until we went to Ecuador, and the next day it would drop into our hand. God does those kinds of things more often than we think, that he wants us to demonstrate to him, and he already knows all about it, but really to demonstrate to ourselves that we trust him, that we're not going to second, third, and 18th guess him. But when he, as he did with Jonathan and his armor bearer, gave them an opportunity to do things backwards, that nobody would have ever done it the way he did it, but he looked ahead to knowing what God was going to do. God was going to be glorified, whether he lost his life or not. But it wasn't up to him to set up the strategy. It was obedience, trust and obey. I'd like to pray. Father, thank you for a Jonathan. Thank you for a weapon carrier. Thank you for two kindred spirits that believe that you had the right to make the call and that they needed to obey. And yes, Father, they did things different because they believed that your strategy was the one that would be effective. Father, may we lay down, may we throw away our strategies and the things that we think will help us be better, even help us serve you better. May we listen to you, Father, and then in your confidence and trust, by your grace and mercy, that we would walk in accordance with you to honor you. Father, thank you for the gift that you've given to us. May we share that gift, that truth of a loving God and a Son who came and gave his life to rescue us, with those that come through our doors and walk back out, with those that we find out on the street, with those that look across the room from us as we work, all those situations. Father, may we understand that there are a lot more divine connections and encounters than we are often aware of. But Father, may we be the ones to share with the world what it is that you have given to us: eternal life, forgiveness of sins, and a home in heaven forever. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.